It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feed to the right side to Foley with a shot, save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Welcome in, Hockey Royalty family. This is another episode of Making It Rain, and I got my supreme co-host over here who's been working hard, and he writes so many articles about the Ontario rain. It should be called the Ontario Downpour with how much content's coming out. Joe Paterino, my man. How's it going?
Fantastic, Brandon. I'm doing very well. How about you?
I'm doing great, man. Hockey's back, obviously. Last night started off 32nd team in the league. A little fun fact, Max Pacioretty, first person to ever score on all 32 teams. I know he had a little advantage being that they played the Kraken, but a little fun fact there for you.
You know what? I don't think I knew that. I did not catch that.
Yeah.
I did not catch that. I was thinking yesterday because, you know, hockey's back on ESPN. And for me, that was a big deal for me when they left. But the biggest thing for me that they left was the theme song. That ESPN theme, is, I just got chills doing it, and I'm like probably tone deaf, so that's how I sound horrible. But to you, is that anything to you? I think we're similar in age-wise, but just you got into hockey a little bit later. So I'm wondering, like, is that theme song mean anything to you?
No, it doesn't. I didn't even hear it until the first time last night. Like, that was the first time I ever heard it. And then I heard it only on a replay because – I went for a little Tuesday night special on the movie theater last night, so I didn't even get to catch the first go around, you know. And so I saw it on the replay, and I was like, "Oh, that's kind of a catchy theme." But no, like Monday Night Football was like always the big one, you know, for my age bracket, because I didn't really get into hockey until like 2010.
Yeah, so like for me, there's the themes that stick out to me the most are Primetime, Boomer, and good Lord, I'm drawing a blank now on who. Oh my God, I can't believe I forget who that was. Anyways, but on ESPN, it was Berman, and then, but the NHL Tonight theme and the hockey on ESPN, Gary Thorne, the music, the song, like it was, to hear that, I'm getting chills every time I see like a commercial or a promo for it or on Twitter, and they did that fantastic feature video on the origins of the theme, which they did a really good job of. So it's awesome. I'm for it. Like they got an interesting panel. You know, people on Twitter are just going to complain about literally everything. And so I'm sure there's people complaining about TNT and the coverage or whatever. Like they're just getting started again. They're trying to find their flow. I'm sure it's going to be great though. Like they're going to have Gretzky here and there. Biz Nasty. There's just so many guys, like personalities and stuff. So it's awesome. I think it's exciting. I think I just saw earlier Gary Bettman had said that it was like a huge ratings. The opening night ratings was great. So it's awesome. I'm pumped, fired up. Hockey's back. I can't wait. It's awesome.
They already had a crossover tonight with Charles Barkley.
I didn't see it, but I love Barkley. It had to be hilarious.
If anybody could fit a puck past him in net with how big he is, it would probably be Gretzky.
Right. He's a. And you know what?
They gave him gear. Like, where do they find like goalie content like big enough for those mitts?
Seriously. And you know, I don't know, maybe I'm in the minority, but I love the fact just some of these ESPN personalities that maybe, you know, with hockey not being involved, I haven't paid as much attention to ESPN, but there's certain personalities. Like, I love Stephen A. Smith, and just the idea of him doing anything, even if it's just a brief segment somewhere on ESPN hockey related, I think it's awesome. It's hilarious. And I'm really kind of interested to see where this goes with ESPN, but it should be fun at the very least. And hopefully they're loose and you know, it's going to be fun. It's going
to
be fun.
Yeah. I'm interested to see, cause I know like a lot of, you know, people down here in Texas, you know, if they're not introduced to the Stars, they really don't know much about hockey, especially like when people at my work. And okay. ESPN is the biggest thing to watch sports on, really. So during the wintertime, it's all basketball and football, right? There's no baseball going on. Yeah. There's really nothing else going on. So it's all NBA news. And then during the week, it's matchups for football, and that's pretty much it. And so now that ESPN is going to be having this coverage, I wonder how many more hockey fans are going to be made in markets that aren't necessarily big. So you're looking, you know, Florida's and Arizona and Texas and all those markets. Not that the Stars don't do well, but the, you know, the lineage of playing hockey when you're young isn't there like it is up north.
Yeah, no, and I think that one thing, and I know Bettman catches a lot of heat. Some of it's probably rightfully so, but you know, there's, from what I understand anyways, there's hockey rinks like all over the place in Arizona now. And you look at Auston Matthews as a product of the move down south, and you're seeing so many, you know, players and kids come from the south now. So hopefully that this is just another layer to that ESPN having that coverage. It's just another, like you said, there's people that are just glued to ESPN because of football and basketball. And even if on the periphery, they, oh, look at that, there's a hockey game, or there's a Dallas Star,
right.
Or they see something Dallas and it clicks, and all of a sudden you've got yourself potentially a new hockey fan. So yeah, hopefully.
Cause right now awesome. Team USA has got one already. You know, Seth Jones, got asked to be on the team. He's from Dallas. So hopefully we get some more players in from the South and can grow the sport.
Yeah, exactly.
And, you know, compete year in, year out with the other powerhouses there in the hockey world. So it's going to be interesting to see the numbers and how it grows over the next 5 years over the contract. So,
yeah.
So speaking of growing, team swelled up during training camp and got cut down to the nitty gritty and just in time for the season. The last cuts were Wagner and Strand. They both cleared waivers. So you have Mata and Athanasiou on IR, and Byfield and Akil Thomas on the IR as well. So they're on like the non-player list because they're waiver exempt. So
it's kind of, I think, like Leah Jamison just went on IR too, by the way, today.
So I've heard mixed things about that. I haven't seen anything from the Kings. I know we posted that he did, but then I saw some other Kings reporters say that they might wait and retroactively do it. So I don't know how that's going to go. They already have an extra forward, either in Grundstrom or Lemieux to play. So I don't know, maybe they'll wait and see how bad it is during the homestand before they go on the road. So we'll see. But I mean, it is a groin injury. Those tend to linger. So maybe it just is going to happen retroactively. But yeah, I saw that too, that it might be IR for him. I don't see anything official. We'll see. Yeah. I mean, by the time you guys hear this, it might be already official and you're staring into your screens on YouTube, like what the heck you guys talking about. So, so let's talk about, since we're the rain and we got games coming up, you know, starting Saturday, where does Wagner and Strand fit into the roster in your mind?
So when I pencil in, and I'm looking here at the lineup that I kind of penciled in, I see, we'll start with Wagner. There's too many options in the top six for me. So I think he's going to fall somewhere in that middle to bottom, probably bottom six. I think anyways, but I mean, even there, like, so I have, again, very like Turcotte, Madden, Kupari, Fagamo, Tynan, are all, those are five guys that are going to be in your, I think going to be in your top six somewhere in some way, shape or form. And maybe even Jared Anderson Dolan, depending on how they slot him, if they move him to the wing, if he's a play center. But I actually think Braden Burks looked pretty good in the preseason. He's the guy with some NHL experience. If he's going to play in the top six or middle six, Johnson's had a pretty good camp, and I think he's a guy that's going to slot into the lineup and be a regular. Martin Furk is still is down there as well. So Wagner, I don't know. I see him at, you know, maybe he's a third line winger in Ontario, but there's so many options. I didn't even mention Dudas. So I'm very interested to see. There's so many guys down there that I'm very curious to see how this opening night lineup is going to shake out, because I would assume that this is going to be, you know, Coach Wrublewski's kind of first look at how he wants to attack the season. Obviously knowing things are can and are going to change probably fairly frequently, but I don't see Wagner in the top six. I can see him on a third line. I can see him on a fourth line. But I've got five lines and an extra written down here. That's how many guys I've got. And I'm sure I'm missing somebody. So there's a, it's going to be a bit of a logjam, if you will. So for Wagner, like I said, I don't think it's in the top six. I think it's more third or fourth line. For Strand, man, I think the way they had the defense group set up in the that second preseason game, I like the look of those with Phillips Dursey, Clegg Spence. I actually wrote in my recap, I didn't love the Movarari Grands pairing, but I can see Strand getting some time, maybe with Movarari on the third pair, and maybe slotting kind of in and out with Grands, and maybe Grands. They may. I can see them kind of slow playing Grands a bit. He's looked exactly as expected for me as somebody who, and I in my preview, I'd said I talked to 16 Funquist. He's a raw talent. He looks it. He looks it, you know, he's a guy that this, you know, he's getting used to the North American rink. He's getting used to the speed and some of the AHL. So I think it's going to be a work in progress for him. And he's at times looked like it's been a bit of a struggle, but that's okay. It's kind of expected. I think I don't have like crazy high expectations for Helgi Grands. I just want to see him settle in and kind of slowly and steadily improve throughout the season. So that said, I think Strand's going to see some ice time, maybe along that right side. I can see him kind of in and out with Grands perhaps. But you know, with the way Spence has looked, I don't see him coming out of the lineup anytime soon, but that's where I see Strand kind of in that 6-7 mold. But see, I'm really looking forward to seeing how the lineup shakes out Saturday.
Yeah, I kind of have the same feeling with both players, and how I feel about it is the Kings know exactly who both those players are. There might be a little bit more ceiling for Strand to touch in his game because he hasn't got that chance at the NHL level, but Wagner has, and they know exactly what role they want him to play. And so why not play the same role for the Rain? Because even if he's playing bottom 6 minutes and he's not scoring a lot of points, the Kings know his style of game, and then they can bring him up if they need to because they know exactly what he gives. Also, the power play was pretty bad last year, and Wagner could definitely help solve some of those problems with his speed and his peskiness in the bottom six area and on the penalty kill. You know, so I'm not too worried about where he plays. I think he's a bottom nine player. If they need him to play on the second line and use his speed, you know, that's not going to be something that's difficult. You know, if a guy needs a night off or a little ankle twinge or something like that, or a back-to-back, and, you know, somebody needs some rest, you know, they could have him play in the second line. But like you said, why change his role, what he's going to have to do on the Rain versus what he's going to have to do on the Kings, and take time away from the prospects that need the development that have not reached their ceiling as a player?
Yeah, I think what you said, too, is he's had enough NHL experience where they know what he is. They know exactly what they're getting out of him. It's not like he's a guy that's a Kupari or a Madden that they're still kind of figuring out what positions he's going to play, what roles he's going to play. How's he developing? I mean, I think they know what Wagner is, so they can call on him at any time to pop into the Kings lineup if they need it, regardless of whether he's playing first line or fourth line in Ontario. I think they can do that if they wanted to. It doesn't matter what line he plays on. But so that's I would agree. Yeah. I would agree. And again, I didn't even mention talking about wingers. I didn't really mention Dudas at first. Then you have Sodergren, Doty, Kemp. There's still – I have a whole fifth line of Doty, Pavlichev, Kemp. And again, I have – where does Ferk fit in all of this too? So you figure he's going to get some ice time. So there's a ton of guys,
And that's the thing about the AHL is there's no roster limit. So
Exactly.
You're going to see a lot of rotation, and as we should. I think Granz is going to be that one of those guys that's going to get in the rotation. He probably won't play every night, maybe every other night. But he's one of those guys that – you know, that I think you just have to get him more playing time. He's not going to get used to the American ice if he doesn't play on the American ice. And sometimes practice is only practice. You work on drills. It's not a live situation. You're working on situational stuff. And so he needs to get on the ice, whether that's every game or every other game, he needs to log minutes for that to improve.
And you know, I know a lot of coaches like to, and I go back and forth on this, and maybe it's, I pick and choose when I want to agree with it, I guess, but a lot of times they'll say, you know, we need this. He's better served this particular game in the press box and watching the game from above. I go back and forth on that a little bit, but because it is true, like if you're watching the game from the press box as opposed to being in it and live, like you see things differently. There's no question about it. So you definitely see a different perspective when you are up there. So I don't think that it's wrong to think that players can't gain something from watching the game from above. So if they do pick and choose when to spot Granz and maybe give him a night off so he can watch from the press box and maybe see how certain plays develop. In his case, I think I will buy into that because I think this is a big year from a development standpoint. I'm not looking or care about, you know, bottom line production from Helgi Granz. I just want to see him steadily improve in the D zone, steadily improve his skating, steadily improve and kind of with his jumps and jumping into the rushes going forward, being confident enough in the offensive zone, those types of things. So, which, you know, again, whether that's playing every night, watching some from above, that's fine. But I want to temper expectations for Granz, but I think it's a development year for him.
Yeah, I think it's going to come down to like what we both said. And then, you know, from a great interview with Travis Kelce talking about Patrick Mahomes is the locker room will know, the coach will know when he's ready for more responsibility, when he's maybe ready for some power play two time. You know, if they're up by 5-1, the AHL is a developmental league. And so those are times that he can get power play time. Those are the times that he could log more minutes and whether they're winning or losing. Mm-hmm. Obviously Robleski wants to win the Calder Trophy. So, you know, winning is important as well. And so, you know, that's his job as a head coach to balance the training with the winning hockey games. So we'll see how that shakes out. I think that he needs more ice time, you know, whether that's viewing or whatever. And then, you know, I think every sport's different. You know, maybe the thing that he needs to work on the most is something that can be learned in practice as well as a game. And so you might get a little bit of both things. So we'll see how that shakes out there. Although we had our best scorer leave the team, to much glad of everybody, with Kaliev going up to the Kings and making the roster. Whether that was because of Byfield and Elias Anderson, we don't know. It's still well deserved. Had a Hattie in one of the preseason games.
It helps.
Some snipe shows. When you're torching the net and they have to bring a fire extinguisher out on the ice, definitely turn some heads. You know, we wish him all the luck. You know, we're going to miss the Artie parties down here. I already stocked up on all the beer, and so I'm going to have to drink that anyways. But we're going to enjoy watching it for the Kings. Where does that leave the top six for you? Obviously, Kaliev was right wing one. So where does that kind of all filter in moving forward?
My assumption, and we'll know for sure on Saturday anyways, at least how they're going to start it. My assumption is Turcotte and Tynan are your 1-2 in terms of down the middle centers. So then you have a wing. So then you have a winger crop. Madden has been playing on the wing, and Kupari has been playing on the wing. So I think those guys are going to be on the wing. Obviously Fagamo's there. So I don't know what combination they went with. Turcotte, Madden, Kupari the other night, but you know, Fagamo, they gave the day off, so maybe Fagamo is going to be up on that top line. I think it just kind of depends, but those are your first three wingers of your top four, of Madden, Kapari, and Fagamo. So I guess you kind of jumble them however you would prefer. Again, we'll say they stick with it and go Madden, Turcotte, Kapari. That leaves Tynan, Fagamo, and who's that left winger? It could be Ferk. Ferk played with Tynan in the first game and was effective. Again, I think Braden Burke has looked pretty good, kind of under the radar good, because he's not like one of these Kings prospects. I think he looks pretty good in the two preseason games. So I can see him. Maybe they move Jared Addison Dolan to the wing and move him into the top six. I can see it. I don't know. I think the way the lineup slots, I expect Anderson Dolan to play third line center in Ontario, but it wouldn't surprise me if they maybe move him to the wing here and there to see how he plays on that side, because there's a chance he's a guy that could move to the wing long term for the Kings. So even if it's not a permanent thing. But so as far as the top six, though, I think Madden, Kapari, Fagamo are locks. It's just a matter of who's that last winger in the top six. Is it Jod? Is it Ferk? Could it be Wagner? Again, I just said I think he's going to be bottom six, so I don't think it's going to be him. And Johnson, could it be Johnson? He's a guy, he brings some wheels, and he's been a guy that's got some AHL experience. Maybe it's him. But I think those are probably the options that you're looking at. I don't think, like, I've been a fan of Sodergren's play, but I think they're going to let him. He's coming off injury and stuff like that, so they're going to let him kind of ease back in. I think Dudas is definitely more of that bottom six winger role. So I think between Burke, Ferk, maybe Johnson, and again, maybe if they move Anderson Dolan to the wing, he could be a guy too. So we'll see Saturday.
Yeah, I like, I think we're on the same page there. I think Ferk's going to be the sixth man in there. I like the Turcotte, Kupari, Fagamo line. Kupari on the left wing, and where he played a little bit in camp with Byfield. Yep. Then you have Madden has been playing on the left side with Tynan a little yep. bit in practice, and have Ferk on the right side. And I really like Madden on the left because he's skillful enough to walk it up the boards and then cut in, and he has a pretty good shot to release from the
dead zone.
So yeah. I kind of like that. I think he's more skillful than Ferk is. Ferk is like a 3-point shooter where he posts up and then he just lets that 110 mile an hour shot go. So, you know, that's kind of why I see it going up.
Yeah, this may not be a popular opinion. I don't know. Ferk, like, I know he shoots the puck a billion miles an hour, and that's great. But I don't know. Like, I'm not, because I know there was some, like, when the Kings waived him, there was a fan base, at least, I mean, I say this as I, you know, browsing Twitter, that they were very, people were concerned about losing Ferk. And it's like, I know he's got, like, he scored some big goals for the Reign in the past. He's been in the organization for a little bit. And I understand that. And I appreciate that. But I mean, I don't know. I'm trying to look at this kind of longer term, if you will. And I don't know. He's
it's
not.
Nostalgia. So it's nostalgia. Yes. You're talking about ESPN, you know, the theme song, the Vilardi Ferk nostalgia of him and them, you know, bouncing pucks back and forth to each other with the Reign and on the Kings. It's the same reason why a lot of people like Jod as the fourth C, and you said Lazat has better numbers or Byfield should be there. It's just because they score goals, and then that gets imprinted here because we've been so destitute. It's like seeing a mirage in the desert. Like, you're like, oh man, I'm so thirsty. There's look at those, all those goals. And like that gets kind of trapped in there. And that shot is unbeknownst. I like that as a player. And I think that if we didn't make acquisitions in the summer, if VA and Kachev aren't there, Ferk is on the team because they need goal scorers. And so, but we don't have them there. Do the Reign need goal scorers? Yeah, their power play was awful, and he'll be a staple on the power play one. The 5-on-5 game with Tynan and his you know, assist-first mentality, it's going to be a match made. And if you look at all the wingers on both sides, they're all shooters. Ferk, Madden can shoot. Kapari can shoot, Fagamo can shoot, you know, Kapari and Madden have a little bit more skill, and then Turcotte and Tynan are assist first guys. So I think it's going to be interesting. And like I said, exactly with Wagner, is Jod has got to develop the skills that he's going to be using in the next level, which are not top six skills. they're going to be bottom six skills. He needs to be taking defensive zone faceoffs. He needs to be playing more penalty kill minutes. He needs to be trying to generate offense from the bottom six. And I think if you're looking at PK one being, you know, Sutter and Wagner, and him being PK two with a with another guy, I think that's going to be a very much a learning aspect for him to take a spot from Lizotte coming up, especially since Byfield's most likely out until December. So
yeah,
I think he needs to learn and like and exemplify what he's good at. And I always had a coach say like, dude, you're not a speedster. Like, why are you working on your base stealing acumen? It's like, you're never going to be that guy. Work on what you're good at. And what he's going to be good at the next level is faceoffs, defensive zone acumen, 200 foot game. And he should really just hammer in and fine tune those points.
Agreed. Because I think that's when I wrote the piece early in the summer. And I don't think, again, I don't think it was necessarily a popular one, but that I preferred Lizotte to.
I heard about boycotts coming your way, man. I didn't give your address out because I didn't want that kind of shade on you, but I heard boycotts were coming.
I saw some of the comments when Hockey Royalty tweeted that the case for Blake Lizotte, that it was like, oh, come on. But like, again, it's boring. It's not sexy. It's not exciting, but it's effective. And, you know, John Robleski, the coach for the Rain, McClellan talked about, you know, we don't want to give back. Like if our top couple of lines are like pressing and pressing and pressing or scoring goals or whatever it might be, we don't want the fourth line to give it back. And Lizotte is, again, it's kind of boring, but it's effective. So if Jared Anderson Dolan, to your point, can work on the rounding out his game, because you mentioned the power play. The power play in the last game for the Rain had Turcotte down low. They had Madden in kind of that bumper role in the 1-3-1. Clegg at the top, who, by the way, Clegg looked awesome, I thought, mm-hmm. in his last preseason game. Kapari, and they had Anderson Dolan on the left side. So I don't know if that's his spot long term, because you mentioned Ferk. I actually think I can see now, again, maybe they want to parse out the talent a bit, but I think that first unit could very well be with Clegg at the top, Kapari on the right circle, Madden in the middle, Turcotte down low, and on the left is Fagamo. And that's just potentially lethal. But on the second unit, you could easily have the likes of Durzi, TJ Tynan. That's where I think Ferk can fit. If anybody has been able to have a chance to watch the Rain or even the Kings rookie faceoff, and if you've seen Jordan Spence, I usually am an advocate for four forwards and one defenseman on the power play, but in this case, to have Durzi and Spence, I'm all in on Jordan Spence the way he's looked so far. So the power play should definitely be better this time around for the Ontario Reign.
You know, there's another spot that I kind of think where Jan maybe could learn some things, some skills would be on the power play, would be the Dustin Brown role, where Turcotte's down, blocking the goalie, he's scrappy, and working on those tip-ins, and like that's the kind of role that I envision.
Jad, so I can see John. Yeah, I can see John if they do a 1-3-1 similar to that. I can see Jad being the guy down low, in that bottom role on PP2. So he's
He's good enough on the boards to eke out those pucks down low, yep, if they need to. He's got quick enough hands down low, and he's a big enough body. I mean, he's 5'11", 187, which is on Elite Prospects, so he's probably a little bit bigger now. You know,
and here's the thing. So I know that in my piece for Lizotte, part of my issue for Jared Anderson Dolan was he scored goals, which as if that's a bad thing. But I just don't I think it's fair to expect that, because his shooting percentage was like 20 some percent, I think. So it's, you can't expect it. But the thing is this, it's interesting. In order to spike a shooting percentage like that, like you have something, you have a tool. Like, in my most recent article, Adrian Kempe, he's never had a shooting percentage in any level, HL, in Sweden, NHL, above like 13%. So he doesn't have a shot that's been able to spike even 15, 16, 17. So there's something there with Dolan that, okay, obviously 20 is not sustainable, but he's done it. And I think like, there's something maybe to that maybe he does have a skill that he can contribute offensively. Now, again, if it's not 20% and it's down more to like the low teens or 12 in that 12 to 14 range, which is still fine. It's just, you have lost a lot in terms of your of what you brought as a offensive producer. So you need to make that up in the back end with how you are in the D zone, which is where his struggles were. But if he can get that and improve that, he can be a really effective bottom six player as we go forward.
Yeah, I mean, you look at him last year, 11 points in 34 games. And so that's obviously showing some offensive skill and some acumen to be around the net when you need to.
Fine role. Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff there. And, you know, I understand your point. I mean, Lazat, it's like a hot dog and a beer at a baseball game. It's reliable. It's always good. Yes. It's there. Is it flashy? No. Does it give you relish? No. It's just a straight line of mustard and a nice cold beer. It's tasty. It's good.
And it depends. But, it depends on what your expectation are. Like, for Lazat, I don't expect him to do anything offensively. Just if he can be good in the D zone, and if he has the right wingers, they can be a line that spends more time in the offensive zone. Maybe they don't have the shooting talent to actually produce the goals, but if they spend time in the offensive zone, that's a win for your fourth line. That's really all you're looking for, is don't hem us into our own zone.
Yeah, them, let's spend Lemieux, time in the Brunstrom team. Are all good around the net.
Right.
And sorry, you said don't have you into the zone. Go. Keep going with your point. Sorry.
Well, no, you're right. You're right, though. But and you know, like, Trevor Moore's in a play. Trevor Moore's in the fourth line.
Yeah.
So, like, they have the potential for a really, really effective possession fourth line that can chip in. And you know what? If Lazat, steps back in terms of his defensive game and it's not working, then you make a change. And obviously Byfield, that's going to be his spot when he gets back in the lineup, whenever that is. I mean, I suspect Byfield may play some games in Ontario just to ease him back in. But I think it's okay for the fourth line guy to not be sexy if he's effective in possession. He doesn't have to score goals. If he has the right wingers around him, Trevor Moore, I really like that. And Athanasio, when he gets back, that's probably your fourth line, is more Lazat, Athanasio. And then, like you said, you have Grunstrom as well, and you have Lemieux. I've probably said it on prior podcasts. Lemieux's a guy that I can see being waived, and I was way off on that if I said it, because he's a guy, he's looked pretty good. Like, to his credit, he has looked okay. In the preseason, he's earned a spot. He's earned a spot in the lineup. So he can bring a little bit of a different element, but you have to slot guys in kind of where they need. Don't force guys if they're not ready. You know, maybe Jared Anderson Dolan last year, it made more sense just because of the way the Kings roster was constructed, but they've added guys, you know, they've added three forwards in Kachev, in Danault, and Arvidsson. So that's going to just knock everybody down a peg. You know, and so that means Jared Anderson Dolan is going to start the season in Ontario. It's good for an Ontario, and I don't think it's a bad thing for him.
Hey, the roster isn't going to look the same from start to finish in the season, and we all know that. So it's not going to be a bad thing, and a little bit of more marination, you know, down in the A is not going to hurt a guy like him. But the Rain made their first set of moves. Frank Ora and Christian Kazatul were released from their PTOs. The goalie room went from 5 to 3. Lucas Parikh was loaned to Rapid City Rush. And John Lethemon is back with the Greenville Swamp Rabbits, my favorite ECHL mascot.
I'm going to get you a Lethemon Swamp Rabbit.
Oh, give me that goalie jersey. Somebody put him like a 00 or something like that to wear some sweet jersey. With COVID protocols and injury risk, do the Rain keep three goalies? Because if, like, you're looking at all the stadiums with like SAP is vaccination only, right? So there's no fans allowed to do testing there. Some of the Canadian teams have the same guidelines. So it's different with every single organization. I don't know the vaccination status of these players, and it's really none of my business. But with the COVID protocols the way they are, do you think that the Rain will keep three goalies on deck in case they have to throw one over to the Kings or vice versa?
I'm kind of expecting them to keep three here at the start anyways. And, you know, I think they've looked pretty good. Like, I was really impressed. I thought England played great in the first game against San Diego. Villalta has been really good. He came in last – or he came – no, he, I'm sorry, he started last game – And I wouldn't necessarily blame him for some of the goals. He actually made a huge save. Sparks started the last game, but he made a huge save in the second period, did Villalta, to keep it at 3-1. So I actually like where the goaltending sits right now for the Reign with Villalta, Sparks, and I think Ingham sticks around for a bit. Maybe they decide, you know, it's not worth it to keep three, and they'll end up sending him somewhere else. But I think for the short term, I can see it. Yeah.
So right now the games swing out. Saturday's the first game against the Goals at home. Then Sunday they have a split home thing with a Abbotsford Canucks coming on Sunday. That's kind of weird having one team on Saturday, one team on Sunday. But they stick around for Tuesday. So you're looking at three games in 4 days. Like you said, they might keep all three goalies around. They each get one and then go from there. It'll just depend on how that goes. But I think just like with any prospect, they're just going to have to see whether him starting more games in the ECHL or wherever he gets loaned to is worth more than him playing every fourth or fifth game.
God, I feel like if there's ever a position that needs reps, it's goaltending. So I think wherever he's seeing the most pucks is going to be beneficial to Ingham. But I think I'm, you know, because I know goaltending has been a sour subject in Ontario, especially last year, but I'm cautiously optimistic the way the preseason and the camps have gone. Villalta's looked good. They've all looked pretty good. Villalta's looked good. Ingham's looked good. Even Lethemann, he played a bit too. He split the game with Ingham the first preseason game. He looked very good. And Sparks, like, I don't know, Sparks, maybe this is, how do I say this without, I don't care as much. The reason I say this is because he's not like a prospect. So I think that, again, you had said this before with Wagner. Like, I think the Kings know Sparks is a guy. He's a veteran. He's been in the NHL. He's been in the AHL. So if they need to call on him, if he has a rough start, like, I don't know. I think they know kind of what they're getting with him. So I look at him in that realm. So I don't mean to be disrespectful when I say I don't care as much about it. It's just because I think I'm coming from that is they kind of know what he is, if you will. Like, well, he's not a guy future. That's developed.
We all, right. All of us Kings fans want to know who's up after Peterson. Who's right. up after Peterson? Is it Villalta? Is it Parik? Is it Ingham? Like, yeah.
Wouldn't
like
you said, listen, I wouldn't be surprised.
Is it Markkanen in Finland? I mean,
it could be, but Parik is a guy I think that we'll see how Villalta plays this season. Like I said, he's had a good bit here in terms of the offseason and preseason here for the Kings and the Reign. But I wouldn't be surprised if Parik ends up being kind of like the slowly gaining steam here. We'll see this season, but I like Parik. I think he's going to be an interesting prospect.
Yeah, so we'll see how that goes. Like I said, they just got to see a ton of pucks, and we'll see how it goes. And maybe they keep all three for like that 3 out of 4 weekend that it starts, and then maybe ship somebody out there. You know, and they also need a partner to dance with. You can't loan a player somewhere if there's not spots. So maybe right. They're still looking for that kind of area there. So let's get to the preseason. Other than you know, the two games, dropping both games against the Goals, I thought there were some positives, some negatives. Definitely love the fights. There were some really good fights there. Love that his name escapes me right now, but like I love that he pushed the referee away. He's like, hey, let me finish my job here. I'm not done at work. Like, don't try to check me out early. The time clock's still running on this one, Bob.
Was that Doty? Was that Doty that did
no, that? No, that was one of the other guys. I forget his name. Doty had the other fight.
I'm drawing a blank too now, and I have it in my notes somewhere. But
he had like two. He has like two names or whatever. His last name has two names or whatever. But I'll start with game. I'll start with just the overall spot for me. I thought there were some positive, negative. There was no game in which the whole lineup was playing with each other. Samuel Fagamo had a late entry into the first game, which he wasn't expecting to play, which means if you're not warming up expecting to play, he played on the fourth line that whole game. So it was just kind of a fill-in. So it really wasn't kind of doing anything there. And so the player that really stuck out to me, and I know that, you know, Spence has been the highlight, but it was Johan Södergren. And
you said that.
And with the fact that he injured all last year, has a bigger body, is going to bring something different to the skill set of the game. And yet he flashed skill in this game with some tape-to-tape passes, some shot that got tipped by Spence, up against work up against the boards. I really liked his grit and the way he played the game, and showing little flashes of skill, like he was just seasoning the pan. You know, like it would just it was good, you know, good color to his game that we already know he can play. And then with him being a little bit of a wild card because of the injury, it's just nice to know that he's there and is contributing instantly.
I'm so pumped that you said that, because I completely agree. And I was very intrigued. And after I did the player preview on him and talking to Sixton and watching some past video, I'm like, this kid's a, you can tell from why he's like, he's got a brain. He's got a hockey brain. Like he knows where to go on the ice when he doesn't have the puck. And you can tell just the way his style of play was. Like, he's first in on forechecks. He's first in back checks. Like he's not afraid of that game, and he's good on the wall. So I wanted to see how he developed, and I've been really, he's one of the forwards that I have on my notes from both games that I've been very impressed with him. To your point, he's very good on the wall, and he's a guy that brings a physical presence, which he's coming off of. I think it's a fairly serious back injury that he had. So how he comes off of that and gets back into game form, we'll see, but really, really happy with the two games that I saw from him. And I think we'll see Saturday if it earned him a spot in the lineup. I kind of think, you know, Wroblewski had some comments after the game, after the second game, that he kind of challenged him a bit and said, you know, let's go take your spot, if you will, be assert yourself. And he did it. So I'm glad you said that, because I'm a big fan of Södergren's, and I thought he's looked really good in the first two games. And he brings an element that, you know, we've talked so much about the skill that Kapari has and Turcotte has and so many other guys have. He has a little bit of skill, but he has kind of a more well-rounded and all around. He can win wall battles. He'll be in on a forecheck. He can backcheck. He can play in the D zone. And he can contribute offensively, and he's smart. He just makes those little smart plays that maybe can kind of go unnoticed a little bit, but keep plays alive or keep pucks in the zones type of thing. So I'm a fan of his, and I hope he's a regular this year.
Yeah, I thought the play that really summed it up for Hockey Sense for both the guys we mentioned, Spencer and Södergren, was the goal there off the faceoff. Sutter, you know, wins the drop back. He's up there a little bit past the right circle and sees, you know, two players in front of the goalie and just chucks the puck towards the low pad. Yeah. and hopes for a tip. And Spence saw that, yep. Tipped it. I don't know if they ended up giving him the goal or if they went to.
They did. I think they finally did. They yeah. Started it with I think it was Sutter they gave it to yeah. originally, but they got it right.
So
that's the thing. To your point,
so,
though,
so
that's
two Hockey Sense plays in one, and it shows the acumen of the team there.
Yeah, because, you know, that was a set faceoff play, first of all. And that there's one thing I've seen from the rain is there's every faceoff you're seeing movement that is definitely pre-planned. They definitely have some set faceoff plays in the offensive zone. And that was one of them, because Spence curls down low as the defenseman and Södergren immediately popped out high toward the point. And, you know, so he gets that puck in that spot. And I think rather than try to wire a clapper or rather than take a few strides in and maybe make a move, you know, he sees the play develop. He sees not just Spence, but Sutter kind of converging on front of the net. And he knows, I just got to get to the area. And he fires it. Doesn't have to be the hardest shot in the world. You just got to get it there and let your guys do the work. And I thought that was a really good heads up play by him. Now, granted, again, it's probably one right out of the practice rink that they've worked on, but that said, he executed it. So that's good to see.
A play is not a play if it doesn't have execution. So that's,
and he did it. Yeah, he did it. And the guys in front, both Sutter and Spence did their job in front, and Spence is the one that got a stick on him. So,
I mean, we were another thing with both of your write-ups is that we were vastly outshot both games. Our defensive core got deeper. And so is this cause for concern for you? Is this the fact that they just didn't play the whole team either game? And so we didn't really get to see like the actual lineup, or like how do you kind of feel about it?
The first game I throw out a little bit because it was definitely not the lineup that we're going to see. The second game, we outshot attempted them. So we did a good job there, and that was a much better. And I think the scoreline was a little. I mean, the rain right from the get go, from the jump, they were the jump was great, and so I thought they were a little unlucky to be down in that first period. They didn't deserve that. They played pretty well. The rest of the game was a bit perhaps a little bit more even, but still, I thought the second game was definitely the better of the two, which isn't surprising when you look at the lineup. But even still, in that second game, figure you did not have TJ Tynan, you did not have Samuel Fagamo, so you were still missing some offensive threats. But they had their decor. That, and I think the one thing that to look out for the Rain this year is you can tell in watching these two preseason games, their D are going to be active. So they're going to be jumping in plays off faceoffs in the offensive zone. They're going to be involved in the cycle in the offensive zone, meaning they're going to jump down as the forwards are coming out of the corner. They're going to jump down into the play. They want that. And then when you have the likes of Dursey and Spence who are going and Clegg who are going to look to probably even lead the rush out of the back end, their D are going to be active. So, you know, inherently that's going to lead to, it's going to leave you exposed, you know, potentially to some odd man rushes coming the other way. It's just going to be the nature of the system that they're going to play. But I think
blitzing, when you're blitzing, sometimes you get burnt deep. That is what it is.
Right. Yeah. And I think they're okay with that. I think they should be okay with that because these are the guys, these are the horses that they're running with. So I think they should do that.
Do you think it's an organizational focal point? Because we've seen a lot more of that in the Kings preseason games as well.
It does. It seems it. It certainly seems it because we've seen it. Yes, we've seen it in LA. I mean, Walker has been, I think Sean Walker's looked really good. Edler's jumping up in plays. Mikey Anderson's pushed up a bit more this season too. So yeah, I think it's an organizational thing.
Which will be good because we were pretty much next to last in almost every single offensive category for the defensemen on the Kings. And having that little bit more of a boost from the back end will be nice.
And I think there's offense to me. Like I tend to believe that offense starts from the back end too. Like you're eventually you're going to have the puck in your own zone. Can you effectively and efficiently get it up and out of your zone? And the Rain have puck movers with Jersey, even Phillips too, Clegg, Spence, Mo Vararri can move the puck well. So they've got guys that can get pucks out of the zone. It's just how do they handle in transition coming back at them?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be the question where they're going to leave themselves exposed a little bit, and we'll see how it goes. But it's going to be there should be some fun games. I mean, these games should be fun because I think with as active as their D is going to be, there should be plenty of offense.
You know, Robo said that in the first year he came, he wants to win. He wants to win games by destroying people. Like he wants to have the offense on all the time, and not take the gas off ever. So. Yeah, you know, it's going to be something interesting to see, and we definitely saw them get burnt last year, but the talent is also better this year, so maybe they're going to be able to handle that style of play a little better. You know, it's good. You need the right talent to do run and gun in basketball. You need the right talent to play air raid in football. They have the right talent to do this style where the D are fully up in the zone and they take those kind of risks.
And that's one of the things I've noted too. I have in my notes is active D, like in terms of these two preseason games. So we only have two preseason games to go off of in terms of, you know, getting ready to prepare for, you know, the season for the Rain. I thought from a team standpoint, I thought when they had more of their regular roster, they controlled the possession against San Diego. I think the goaltending has looked good. And I think their D there's definitely we are getting our D active. So that's good. And from an individual standpoint and looking at these first couple of preseason games and just some guys that stood out, and I'll let you take it if you want to take it anywhere from here, but I'll just list them. I thought Spence looked awesome. Big fan of Sodergran. Kupari had the puck on his stick a number of times in that last game. It just, he couldn't find it, but the puck was always on his stick. I liked Jared Anderson Dolan's game in the preseason. And, Pavlichev, who was a late scratch in the first game, I thought he had a really good second game. Really good. Like he skated much better than I expected him to for a giant. But a really good game. He assisted on Sodergran's goal in the second game. So I thought he looked good. And if he's going to be a guy that's kind of, you know, I assume right now he's kind of on the outside looking in as far as a regular, but again, interesting player, but a good debut, I thought, in the preseason for him.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And where I kind of see it going in is, you know, rookie tournament, normal camp, leading into the two preseason games, they're all intertwined. And yep. at different points in this offseason, you saw Kupari really shine, Turcotte really shine, and Bagamo really shine. And yep. I think that first line is going to be a juggernaut line if they can find the chemistry, because Kupari is really trying to find his game, not being too much of a dandy playmaker and trying to find seams and get to the net. You're finding Turcotte is doing a better job of utilizing his size and weight up against the boards, where he was getting pushed around quite a bit last year. He looked a hell of a lot better in the World Juniors. So he's looking like he's been able to use his size a little better, and Fagamo is constantly using that shot. So I think that'll be a line definitely that could lead our team to a lot of victories.
And Kupari, so you just mentioned it, and I noticed it in the first period of the last game against the Gulls. He had a couple of opportunities with the puck on a stick in the offensive zone. To me, and again, I mentioned earlier about watching the game from above rather than when you're in it. It's easy for me to say, but I think he held it just like a half second too long. He was looking for a play that maybe wasn't going to develop. So I hope he's kind of learning that, and maybe we'll continue to see him grow in that sense where, you know, he's holding it probably a half second to a second longer than he should. You know, either make that pass, if it's not there, trust your shot and get a zipper on net. If you're in, because he was in, you know, he was in the circle. Like, it's not as if he was, you know, on the wall or anything. Like, he had opportunities to maybe put it toward the net, but he was looking to make a play, which I appreciate. But, you know, if it's not there, and nothing ended up happening, like nothing. There were three times, I think, that I noted in the first period that he had a puck on his stick in a scoring opportunity that never even resulted in a shot on goal. So, like, there's some positive and negative. Positive is the puck's finding him, and he's in spots where the puck's getting on his stick. The negative being, let's just – how does he turn that into let's get pucks – I don't want to blindly say throw pucks in nets, because I want guys to be creative. I want guys to make plays if they're there. But it's just about recognizing, like, when that play is going to develop versus when it's not, and when you need to put the puck at the net or wait for that play to develop. So we'll see how that develops for Kupari. But
yeah, it's just fine-tuning his skill set. When you're younger, yeah. You can dance around and do whatever you want because you're that skilled. You're the number one player on the team. And so, you know, T-Mac alluded to it last year. Kupari's mentioned it in his own interviews. You know, T-Mac said, like, he has amazing feet, great balance, and sometimes he just needs to drive hard to the net. Awesome. Yeah, he just needs to drive hard to the net because he is a great skater. If instead of trying to make a fancy play, drive hard to the net, crash. Hopefully we get a rebound and we get a shooting opportunity that way, or shoot the puck more. But, you know, he's not going to be – he just needs to make that decision sometimes and drive the net. And just like in basketball, you get fouls and stuff right there. You create penalties, you create opportunities out of chaos, and he could definitely be that type of person, especially with Turcotte, who loves going to the net as well.
So, and that is what – it's part of what – starts to separate guys as you go up in levels. So many of these guys, first of all these guys in the American Hockey League can shoot it. They've all got zippers for shots. They've all got pretty good hands too. And much of these guys, it's as you go up in level, the speed increases. So can you make those decisions, whether it's I'm going to pass it, or I'm going to shoot it, or I'm going to make a move, or I'm going to delay, whatever it's going to be. Can you make those decisions at top speed with the game zipping around you? And I think that's where Kupari, when it comes to the development, is where is he in that? Because the jump from the AHL to the NHL is everything's going to be that much quicker, right? So those decisions have to be that much quicker. So if he's in the first period in the preseason game against the Gulls and he's kind of holding it a little too long, maybe unsure, that's not going to fly. It's not going to work because they're going to close down on you even quicker in the NHL. So, but that's okay. Like I think he doesn't have to be ready yet necessarily. And maybe as the season goes along, I fully expect him to be perfectly fine this year, and I think he's going to spend some time in Los Angeles. But as you go up in level, everything has to be done a little bit quicker. And it's the guys that can process it. You talk hockey IQ, the guys that can process it a little bit quicker and make those plays at top speed, those are the guys that excel and then can stay in those skill top six roles as they go up in level. Otherwise, you find yourself, now you have to maybe adjust your game and you're playing in a third line role or a bottom six role because you can't make those skill plays at top speed like you could before.
Yeah, it's a very good point. And not only is he trying to figure out that, the players he's playing with are trying to figure out that. So maybe he's thinking at a higher level than some of his line mates.
Sure.
You got to find that chemistry when it comes to the game. And so it's just going to be interesting to see. It looked like he had great chemistry with Byfield on that preseason game. And so, you know, just finding that kind of match and people who think the same as you and get open. That's what we talk about pairs. When you have a good pair and you're thinking the same on the ice where everybody is supposed to be, it makes the game a whole lot easier. So
yeah,
it's going to be some interesting hockey. We've got the Kings game tomorrow, home opener. Well, you might be listening to this the day of or the day after because the rain don't play till Saturday. This is the making it rain. So hopefully we get some W's this week. Hockey is back, so it's going to be just fun viewing it. I don't know what you're doing tomorrow. I think I'm doing tacos tomorrow. I know you got your brother's – is it your brother's wedding or family?
My brother is getting married on Saturday. So tomorrow is the rehearsal. We're doing the rehearsal tomorrow. So we'll have some, you know, all that's going on. So I'm the best man. I got to finalize my speech. I'm still working on finalizing that. That's what I do. Everything's last minute with me.
Leave yourself some crying breaks just so, you know, you can get through the whole thing. and you're not a YouTube sensation. So
I don't want to be that. I do now. The last thing I want to be is a YouTube sensation and because of a best man speech.
So, well, Joe, it's been a pleasure as always. I know we could always talk for another 2 to 3 hours, maybe create a Lord of the Rings saga out of Ontario Reign Hockey, but the fans have lives too. And so we're going to cut this one here and get it going next week after a couple of games have been dropped. You guys can find us at hockeyroyalty.com. Articles are coming out every day. Joe is holding the fort down for the Ontario Reign and all that coverage because I have an old fashioned typewriter and he's better than I am. And so, and then we have, Kings content coming out as well. You can find us at hockey_royalty or royalty_pod. Joseph, where can they find you on the old Twitskies?
J.W. Paterino.
And I'm at RandoCommando24. Always coming at you with the fun stuff here for the Ontario Reign. You guys have a great time after you're done listening to this, and let's catch some hockey this weekend.
Enjoy.